We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to the RotoWire Prospect Podcast, sponsored by WinBet. I'm Clay Link here with RotoWire.com's lead prospect analyst, James Anderson. Good to be back with you, James. Hope Vegas was fun, and congrats to you and all my Wisconsin brethren on the Milwaukee Bucks title. I'm a little surprised you are with us today. You're able to do the show, although I've never known you to whiff on your duties.
I partied pretty hard after game five or during game five, but game six, I just watched at home with my wife and the dog. I wanted to really kind of live in the moment, and I wanted to be really productive today. So,
I'm really stoked. Starting a new era, you move into a new home, you got a dog, and now you got a Bucks ring. I'm happy for you guys. I was thinking last night about my childhood best friend Nathan in Arcanum, Ohio. Was randomly a Bucks guy. Like, he had a Vin Baker poster on his wall. So I was thinking of Nathan today.
But Vin Baker is an assistant coach on this team.
Is he? I didn't know that. Yep. Bucks fans far and wide, and across the United States and across the world. Frankly, how was Vegas for you, James?
Oh, it was a blast. Ate a lot of good food, just chilled out, recharged the batteries. It was a lot of fun.
That's great. And you made my life easy covering the draft, even though you were, you know, away on vacation. You made things easy with your work you did ahead of time. Notes going up real time for every pick, pick-by-pick analysis. I thought the coverage was fantastic. Henry Davis was the first pick. We'll kind of go through a few of these. Also, you have your updated top 400 on the site we'll talk about. But any major surprises, anything that you would label a surprise in the early rounds this year?
I think the big surprise probably for me, just based on how much I like him, was just that Khalil Watson fell to 16. He's my third-ranked prospect from this class for Dynasty. So the third best guy and a guy that I had ranked first ahead of the draft, falling to 16, I thought was surprising. And I think a lot of those teams that passed on him are going to regret that one. But I kind of thought that this was going to be a weird draft. It's such a bad class that beauty was really going to be in the eye of the beholder. And these teams were going to, they were going to be looking to cut deals, especially with the top guys. And there just really wasn't going to be much of a consensus. It wasn't going to be chalky just because, like, you know, everyone sort of had the same top seven or eight guys on their real life rankings. You know, if you looked at like Baseball America or MLB Pipeline or anything like that, it was usually like the same seven or eight guys. But then I think there was a lot of room for disagreement, stark disagreement outside of that. So, yeah, it was not chalky at all. But and then, you know, we had two of the better prep hitters from the entire class not sign or, you know, kind of pull out or basically tell teams they weren't going to sign. In Peyton Stovall, who would have been a borderline top 100 guy. Will Taylor also would have been a borderline top 100 guy. So losing those two guys from an already really weak class, I didn't really see that coming just because I thought the money would be there for guys like that. But, yeah, I mean, it was a lot of fun to kind of watch unfold.
I was hoping Khalil Watson would fall one more pick to the Reds at 17. There must be some signability questions with Watson. I'd heard some rumors about that. He hasn't actually signed yet, has he?
No, but I think he signs. I kind of honestly, I think it was more. You had a lot of these. I think a lot of the teams that passed on him basically had deals with other players already in place and just weren't gonna zig away from that plan just because he fell into their lap, which I think was a mistake, but. I also just think like him being 5'9", there's still a big time bias against shorter players, regardless of position. So I think he's going to sign. Like I think the Marlins are way too sharp to take him if there was a chance he wasn't going to sign. I think it was just maybe a combination of factors. And, you know, like Jordan Lawler, I think was more of a signability risk than Watson. And I think that that's one to watch. I assume he's going to sign, but you know, I think it was more just like, you know, three or four teams really screwed up by passing on him. And three or four teams were just like, look, we want this college guy. We're going to get him under slot. That's going to allow us to get this other guy that we want later. And just that combination of factors just led to him falling.
I know there was some general surprise at Frank Mazzucato going at 7 to Kansas City. I was surprised that Detroit passed on Marcelo Mayer when he was still there and took Jackson Jobe. It seemed like they'd kind of zeroed in on Jobe. They liked him a lot. But that just seems like kind of a microcosm of the problems there with Detroit. Like, shouldn't – I don't know. Maybe they should have pivoted. Maybe they had something worked out with Jobe already, but – when Mayer was still there at 3, I think you should take that position, player.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think you're right. I think they did have something worked out with Jobe. I mean, if you know, obviously for Dynasty, we're going to be much lower on Jobe. But, I mean, Jobe was the most talented pitcher in the entire class. He's a prep righty, so there's a lot of risk there. I could see why any team would fall in love with him and want to bring him in on a underslot deal. But yeah, I mean, I think you take a guy like Meyer there. I mean, it's just much safer. But I wasn't surprised. I mean, there was so much smoke about the Tigers being connected to Jobe before the draft that one kind of seemed locked in already.
So Meyer is your top ranked prospect on the updated top 400 from this draft class. You can easily see the up down arrows along with the plus icons to let you know where a guy is slotting in. And he slots in at 36. Second behind him in this class is Henry Davis, the number one pick. How do you think Pittsburgh did following up Henry Davis at 1?
I think they just absolutely crushed it. I mean, that was a really nice plan that they had in place. To take, I mean, you get the best college hitter in the entire draft at 1, and you get him for almost $2 million under slot that allows you to get three of the most talented high school players in the class with your next three picks. And that's just, I mean, that just worked out perfectly. Like, they didn't, like Henry Davis, there was a case for him to be the number one player in this class anyways, especially for real life. And to get him on such an underslot deal at 1, and allowing yourself to get, you know, like Lonnie White and Anthony Solometto are first round caliber talents, and they get both those guys in addition to Davis. I just think it was just a perfect plan. They executed it very well. And this, like, I was updating all the team top 20s, finished doing that this morning. man, dude, the Pirates system is just absolutely stacked right now. They are building a monster on the farm there. They've got 24 guys inside my top 400. They've got another like 15 to 20 guys who I think you could argue should be in the top 400. So the Pirates are really building something that could be, you know, incredibly special like 5 years from now.
Hey, good for them and that fan base. They need something. Maybe they'll follow a path similar to like the Astros a few years ago. They were just so bad, but then maybe they'll build a contender, a sustainable contender for years to come. You know, the Reds had 3 picks on day one. I was pretty underwhelmed. I try not to be a pessimist, but the Reds are just trying to put me in an early grave here, James. The way they've come out of the break, I thought the first day of their draft was a little underwhelming. I know one of the guys was kind of described as like Nick Madrigal light. Maybe that was Matt McClain. I guess Jay Allen could be something.
I liked McClain. I have him ranked 8th from this draft for fantasy. I like McClain more than I like Colton Cowser or Sal Frelick, who the Orioles took Cowser at 5. My Brewers took Frelick at 15. I would have taken McClain over both those guys. The Madrigal comp, it's kind of lazy, really. People shouldn't get compared to Nick Madrigal because Nick Madrigal is such kind of like a unicorn in terms of just his size and his skill set. Like his strengths are just almost impossible to duplicate. Like there just aren't guys that make contact at that type of clip. And then his lack of power with that hit tool, it's just so, it's such a rare combination. Whereas I think McClain is more kind of, you know, sort of your standard, like could be a leadoff hitter, could be a number 2 hitter. I think there's a bit more pop in there than I think he gets credit for. Like, I think he is a pretty good bet, especially in that ballpark, to be a 15 plus homer guy, which you obviously wouldn't say about Madrigal. And he's got more speed than Madrigal. Like, I think he's got a higher stolen base upside than Madrigal does. So, and he's not going to have that type of 80 grade hit tool that the Madrigal has. So, I think McClain is, you know, in a normal draft class, I wouldn't be very excited about him, but in this draft class, just given how weak the college crop of hitters were, getting an up the middle guy like that, who's going to do a little bit of everything, I thought that was a really solid pick by the Reds.
Well, that's good to hear. Yeah, that wasn't the only lazy comp that night. But I do have to say, Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo were actually kind of fighting the comps, and it was kind of like a thing on the broadcast. It was kind of funny.
Well, yeah. I mean, those guys who aren't the draft experts, I'm sure, like Reynolds or
I love
Kamsinger or whoever, like they're just obsessed with comps, right? Mm. And like all the like hardcore scouting guys hate
pushback.
So, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, like that would have been probably pretty funny to watch.
It's kind of funny to see that because, like, you know, they have to kind of put up with it every draft, but it was kind of funny seeing Callis kind of push back on it. Kumar Rocker, John Leiter, you kind of alluded to this before the draft, but they slot in back to back. Really kind of a toss-up for you, it seems like, between these two arms. Leiter going ahead of Rocker. Rocker falling to the Mets at I think, 10, was it, overall?
Yep.
And, you still like Rocker a little bit more, but for you it's very neck and neck with these two.
Yeah, and I'm sure that they won't stay that close in the rankings in the coming year. I mean, you know, one of them will – separate themselves, but I think Rocker, I think that was a really nice landing spot for him in New York, and I think he's just got a higher ceiling than Leiter. I think Leiter is about as safe as you get as a college starter in terms of just being like a number 3 starter in the majors. The best fastball in this class, not necessarily from a velocity standpoint, but from a movement and command standpoint. But you know, I don't know if there's much more there in terms of like there being a second true plus pitch with Leiter. Whereas with Rocker, when he's going well, the fastball and the slider are double plus pitches, and it's just a matter of developing that third pitch. And if the Mets can do that, then I think he could be a frontline guy. So, you know, Rocker's riskier. Both guys are plenty risky just by being pitching prospects, but I think I would take Rocker over Leiter just slightly because of the upside.
Did the Mets already say that Rocker's not going to pitch anywhere this year? He's just going to...
I maybe saw that. I mean, that was, you should never expect, like, yeah, especially a guy who goes deep into the College World Series like that.
That's probably smart of the Mets. I mean,
oh yeah,
take it easy on the kid. Yeah.
Yeah. You shut that guy down. You just let him rest, get him back up throwing, maybe follow the instructs or something like that. But, you know, I think Leiter, I have Rocker one spot ahead of Leiter. But I think I put a 2022 ETA on Leiter and a 2023 ETA on Rocker. And that, so that kind of gives you the, like, Leiter is going to be very quick to the majors if he stays healthy. There's not a ton for him to get better at. He's really, there's like no projection remaining basically with him. Whereas Rocker, you might have to wait a little longer, but it could be really special.
Nice. Well, before we move on, let's throw to a quick word from our sponsors.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
And now we are back on the RotoWire Prospect Podcast, sponsored by WinBet. I'm Clay Link here with RotoWire.com's lead prospect analyst, James Anderson. We're looking at his updated top 400 prospect list, which includes this year's draftees. RotoWire.com/pod for a 10-day trial. And James, I hadn't heard of this kid, you know, 10 days ago, outside of maybe what you had told us. And it was just watching him for a couple minutes. But I thought Colson Montgomery came off really well in his post-draft interview. He just seemed like he had the cool factor, like 70 grade cool.
Hell yeah.
I think he's a nice pick by the White Sox.
Yeah, I slotted him in 11th in this class, and he went 22nd. So I don't think he should have fallen that far. I think he's got just a beautiful swing that's really already built for power. I think he's going to be a plus power guy. And the White Sox had a good draft. Usually I don't like what the White Sox do. Like taking Jared Kelly last year, I was not a fan of at all. But they also got Wes Koff at pick 57, who's a power hitting third baseman, a prep guy that I'm pretty into. So I think the White Sox did a really nice job. Montgomery, I believe, is just outside the top 100, but he's probably going to play. He's probably going to play in some rookie level games this summer. And if he hits, I mean, the rankings here for first year player drafts, I know some people have probably already done their first year player draft. Some people draft like right after the draft. But I think these rankings are really going to be fluid, especially when we see some of these prep guys get out there and just sort of see just how much they can hit.
Very nice, man. Well, I'm not a prospect, but I did just see this note coming across the wire recently about Alex Kirilov. Do you see that?
No.
I believe he's graduated already, but he's going to be having wrist surgery. So that's a big bummer. Geez. Season-ending wrist surgery for Kirilov. That sucks. But yeah, I don't see him on your list, so he must have graduated. Will Bednar, brother of David Bednar, right? And Will going to San Francisco. I know you've liked what San Francisco has been building. Do you think Will Bednar's another nice piece on top of everything else for the Giants?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a perfect fit, player and team. Bednar could be kind of right there with Jack Leiter in terms of being a quick guy to the majors. He really helped himself, obviously, in the College World Series. Was the most outstanding player, I believe. And, he's got a really nice fastball-slider combo. And the Giants are really up there. I mean, it's kind of the Giants, Cleveland. If you're just kind of saying which teams, like, do you want a pitching prospect to get drafted by, I think it's probably Cleveland and the Giants. You could say like a team like the Dodgers, they obviously know what they're doing, maybe the Brewers, but like the Dodgers are just always going to be really crowded, that there's some kind of like extra relief risk there if you just can't crack that top five. I think Bednar, I mean, we've seen what the Giants have already done with like a guy like Kyle Harrison, who's obviously a prep guy, different type of pitcher, but they're just really good at developing all players, but pitchers as well.
Well, before we move on to the risers and fallers non-2021 draftees edition, anything else you want to mention on the draft class where these guys are slotting in?
I think only eight guys cracked my top 100. And I just, be careful out there. It's not a good draft class. So, I think in a lot of first year player drafts, it's usually a combination of you can take those first year player guys, or you can just take the best prospect who wasn't kept, who was taken in a previous draft or signed internationally or whatever. Like, I could see myself using, like, if I have five first-year player draft picks, I might only use one or two of them on guys from this draft class. Like, I might be just going after prospects that just got thrown back or didn't get added before a roster's locked or anything like that. So, it's not a good year to have a high pick in a first-year player draft. Hopefully, maybe that storyline can kind of change this summer if some of these guys go out and really surprise us, but one of the worst classes for fantasy that I've seen since I've been doing this.
So that's a bummer, but there's still a few guys and diamonds in the rough will emerge in time, but
yep. It's
just, it takes at least 2 years before you can even start to evaluate the class. But a 2020 draftee, Tyler Soderstrom's a double green arrow up guy for you on the latest prospect update, James. He's up to 16th. Overall, so he'd be the number two catching prospect behind Adley Rutschman. And you're getting pretty excited about what you've seen from Soderstrom.
Yeah, I mean, I was too low on him, I think, pre-draft. But, I knew that could be a possibility. With any kind of prep catcher, any prep hitter, really, there's going to be just kind of an unknown about how much they're actually going to hit. Although Soderstrom really had been getting rave reviews for a while. You throw in trying to get better at catcher. Sometimes guys take that with them to the plate and just don't really perform. But Soderstrom, I think he's hitting enough right now at low A that I just don't see him debuting as a catcher. Like, I think he's going to move to left field, right field, first base, third base, one of the corners, and they're just going to get his bat into the majors as soon as they can, because I mean, he could be just a really, really special hitter. And I mean, he's got one of the sweetest swings in all the minors. It's just beautiful, beautiful to watch him hit. And, you know, this is kind of a, he's a very, very different hitter than like Bryce Harper, but like, you don't take a guy that's that special at hitting and force him to catch. There's just too much that could go wrong. So, I mean, it might be different if Soderstrom was already just this awesome defensive catcher, you know, like Buster Posey. Buster Posey was never going to get moved off catcher because he was just too good there. But, you know, Soderstrom's a below average catcher right now. He's already playing a little bit of first base. So, you know, I'm ranking him inside the top 20 just because I think the bat is really going to play, and I think it's going to force the A's to move him off of the position.
Pedro Leon just got bumped up to AAA, I saw. Now he's up to 18 on your prospect list here. 23 years old, and looks like he's gotten off to a pretty nice start at AAA. I was just looking to confirm. It was only one game, so I'm getting out ahead of myself, but two walks and a hit in that one game. But good for him getting the bump up to Sugarland.
Yeah, and I think context is important here with Leon. I know some people have just kind of been like, "Are you really like that impressed by what he's done this year?" I'm kind of throwing out, like, to me, like spring training, like the first month or so of the season. Like, he was really getting up to speed in terms of just adjusting to stateside pitching. He hadn't been playing competitively in a long time. Like, I think it was like 2 years between when he last played and when he actually signed with the Astros. And the pandemic obviously didn't help matters. So, Leon, you know, since June, he's hitting 300, 423, 540. Walking almost 15% of the time, striking out just under 25% of the time. But the big thing with him, like, I think strikeouts will be there. Like, he's probably going to strike out a decent amount at AAA. But the power and speed is, I think it's just getting undersold. I think people don't fully realize just how high this guy's ceiling is for fantasy. He's at least a plus runner. And he's still improving as a base stealer. He's got some work to do there, but he's attempting a ton of steals at least, which is nice. And he's got a ton of power to the pull side, which if you think about in Houston, the Crawford boxes, like, he's just gonna wear those out. And I mean, he could be a 30-30 guy. Like, he could be just really, really awesome for fantasy. Can play center field, can play shortstop, two positions that are kind of unclaimed beyond this year for Houston. So shouldn't be hard for him to break through with the big league club. And I mean, we might even see him up this year, like him and Bobby Witt and like Nick Prado, like all got promoted from AA to AAA, like within a day or two of each other. And like, this is kind of when you move your guy that is maybe in the mix, you move him up to AAA now. You still got a couple months left, see how he does. And I think, you know, any of those guys could force the issue here down the stretch. So it's not stashing season, I don't think, at least in like 15 team mixed leagues, but would not be surprised if Leon was heard from later this year, maybe in September.
Yeah, that was going to be my follow-up, because when I was doing the show on MLB Network Radio with Todd last week, I said, you know, I felt maybe the Jaron Duran's of the world, maybe the last wave, but maybe not. Maybe, I mean, the Royals are awful, so I don't know if they'll want to start Witt's clock, maybe not. But Leon, it's interesting that you think there's a chance that he could jump another level yet. James, I got some bad news for you. According to Mark Topkin, the Tampa Bay Times, the Rays sent Fidel Brujan down. So I want to apologize to you, because I went out and spent for him in the main. I was on fab duty that week, and we needed some bags. It's not really that big of a surprise that he was sent down, but
I was kind of hoping
he'd stick around.
I would demand apologies from you and from Todd Whitestone, who scooped him in one of our leagues. but I can't demand those apologies because I was MIA, I think, for the weeks where you guys added him. So, I mean, that's just my bad for not being the voice of reason there. But
I mean, I didn't go too crazy, but I probably spent 70 or so on him. But
yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. I know you like Vidal Brujan, but not so much necessarily the stint in the majors. Where's Brujan slotting in on your list nowadays, by the way? Let me see here. Sorry, my internet.
17.
Okay.
He's actually right in between Satterstrom and Leon.
I gotcha. Well, tell us a little bit, James, if you would, about Jose Miranda. He's got the two green arrows up, Minnesota third baseman. What's got him climbing so high?
Yeah, so Miranda was a guy who back in like 2017, like the offseason after 2017, was flirting with like the top 200 because I just loved the contact skills that he was showing in the lower levels. And, you know, he was getting to a little bit of power then. This was kind of in, I want to say, like the Appy League and low A. And so this was a guy that I used to be really high on. I mean, no one was ranking Miranda back then. So, like, just the fact that I even had him around 200, like, that was a pretty big vote of confidence for him. But then he goes to high A, double A, 2018, 2019. You know, he's always made contact at an excellent clip, but, you know, he wasn't walking a ton. He wasn't hitting for much power. Then we have the pandemic, obviously, just kind of out of sight, out of mind. But this year, he got assigned to double A as a 23-year-old, and he did exactly what you're supposed to do as a 23-year-old at double A. He destroyed it. 345, 408, 588 with 13 homers and 47 games. And then he gets the bump up to AAA, and he's been even better at AAA. You know, similar slash line, even more power. He's walking more, striking out a little bit more, but still, you know, an elite strikeout rate for a 23-year-old at AAA who's doing as much damage as he's doing. And I was actually texting with our buddy Chris Welsh about Miranda earlier today. Like, these guys that go to double A and then to triple A and destroy both levels at age appropriate, you know, being age appropriate for double A, triple A, those guys that do that in the span of like 2 to 3 months, that's usually a pretty big sign that something's happening here. And I kind of compared it a little bit to like Trent Grisham in 2019. Very different types of players. Miranda's not going to be a threat with, you know, his heels at all. But, you know, going to double A, dominating in your first taste of double A, and then going right up to triple A and not skipping a beat when you're 23, that's big. And usually there's some growing pains there. But Miranda's just been raking. You know, if the Twins were to find a taker for Josh Donaldson or something like that, I think we could see him this year. But at the very least, Miranda is going to be a big part of the Twins in 2022.
Very nice. Now, Mason Wynn in the Cardinals organization, you may look at the numbers, James, and I say you, but I mean me. Look at it, you know, kind of underwhelming, 777 OPS, but kid's 19 at a full season affiliate. That low A and running quite a bit, 16 bags. I can see why you're bumping him up, even though the numbers may not jump out off the page at a glance.
Yeah, I mean, and the context is big here too, because you'll recall, like, prior to last year's draft, I said like Mason Wynn would be, you know, one of my 5 or 10 favorite players in the entire draft if I knew that he was going to be developed as a shortstop. Because he was a two-way guy, and some teams liked him even better as a pitcher. But the Cardinals have sent him out as a shortstop, and the strikeout rates is better than I would have thought. You know, a lot of guys his age and with his experience would have opened in rookie ball. The Cardinals sent him to low A. And, you know, he could have been worse than he's been to this point and would have stayed in like the top 150. But he's been 16% better in league average. He's walking a ton. There's a lot more power in there than he's shown so far. Like, I mean, this is a guy with big time power speed potential. The power is going to probably show up last, but just the fact that he's showing this type of approach at low A and that they're not messing around with the two-way stuff just has me really excited about what's in store for Wynn.
Tanner Houck's inside your top 100 and making waves at the big league level right now. Did you add any Tanner Houck in your fantasy leagues in recent weeks?
I did. I he was a priority add for me this past Sunday. I scooped him up in TGFBI, I believe.
He's got the Yankees tomorrow. So.
Yeah, I'm not starting him this week. It's a spec. You know, it's a spec ad, right? Like, I think the stuff is really good. He's been really good. But he hasn't been asked to pitch and handle a true star's workload in the majors yet this season. But he's a guy that I really liked, like at the end of last season, just sort of digging in what he did. I mean, the slider is ridiculous. The sinker is ridiculous. And I think he could be a difference maker down the stretch, especially with if you're dealing with injuries to your pitching staff. The matchups might not always be pretty. Like, he's got the Yankees this week, he's got the Blue Jays next week, so you might not feel great about starting him in either of those, but I think that, you know, I think he's got the Tigers the week after that, so that could be pretty juicy.
What about Jake Berger? This is a guy who did he hurt his Achilles in like a home accident or something?
Well, he hurt his Achilles multiple times. Like, he had to have multiple Achilles surgeries.
That sucks. But
and it's such a good story that we're even talking about him. Like, there wouldn't have been any shame in that kind of ending his pro career, basically, because he missed so much time. Like,
he missed three whole years.
Yeah, he did.
According to his stat log. Yeah,
that's insane. he only played 51 games in 2017 and then didn't play at all until this year. I mean, I'm sure he was playing in some games somewhere, but not like games that were tracked. And he shows up at AAA, was awesome there, hitting for power, hitting for average. He's in the majors right now. I mean, the strikeouts are worth watching, and he is 25, but I mean, the context, he's a really young 25 from a developmental standpoint, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, you can almost think of him as like a 22, 23 year old, just in terms of how many reps he's had. And yeah, I think there might be something there with Jake Berger. He's hitting the ball hard. He's not inside my top 100, so I'm not like all in, but like, I added him in a deep mixed league where I was hurting at third base, just to kind of see what happens. I think it's worth exploring.
That is a tremendous story. Good for Jake Berger. That's unimaginable almost that he hadn't played a competitive game, an organized game of baseball in 3 years before this year. Now he's tearing it up at the big league level. Only 12 games, but that is really impressive. And, yeah, it looks like the second tear of the Achilles was the one at home. So he tore it in February of 2018, then re-tore in May of that year. So that's quite a thing to come back from for Jake Berger. Now, James, I want to talk a little bit about rookie level performances that have caught some attention. I've noticed one name, Ortega's been kind of making the rounds here and there on Twitter. And I think our buddy Ian Kahn was talking about him. But before we get into specific players, is there something or some things you look for specifically at the rookie levels that kind of tip you off one way or another, or that you put more stock into down there?
Yeah, I think it's just worth going over just kind of the basics there, just for people that are doing this at home. So we have the Florida and the Arizona Complex Leagues going on right now. We also have the Dominican Summer League going on right now. That's it. There's no more Pioneer League. There's no more Appy League or New York Penn League. So it's just those complex leagues, and then the next move up is to low A. And so I think it's important to like talk about like what's age appropriate for those rookie levels. Dominican Summer League, 17 years of age is the age appropriate for the DSL. So, and I know some people just poo-poo looking at DSL stats, regardless of how old the guy is. I disagree with that. I think that as long as you're using context, it can be valuable, and it's more of like a checkpoint, right? Like a 17-year-old who's destroying the DSL, that doesn't mean that player is awesome, but it does mean that that player is doing what they're supposed to do. Like, you're not supposed to go to the DSL and suck. Like, you're not supposed to go there, you know, even if you strike out, like if you go there and you strike out like 25-30% of the time, that's a pretty big red flag. Like, you're supposed to go there and really tear it up. And if you're 18 and you're there, you're really supposed to tear it up. So the guys that actually go there and do what they're supposed to do, it's like, okay, they're on course, right? So you can kind of get excited. With the complex leagues, age appropriate is kind of like 18. Maybe you're a young 19 and it just kind of makes sense. Like, your experience dictates that that's where you go. But like, if you see an older 19-year-old or 20-year-old tearing it up in the complex leagues, that basically doesn't mean anything to me. You want it to be a guy who's 17 or 18, ideally, and a guy that's got a ton of pedigree, like Reginald Preciado with the Cubs, who's the headliner in that Yu Darvish trade. Perfect example, right? Like, he should be in the complex league. He's age appropriate. He's got a ton of pedigree and he's dominating. So like, that's a big sign that he could be the talk of the Arizona Complex League this summer. Kind of same thing with like Errol Vera of the Angels. Victor Acosta is a guy who's doing really well in the DSL, who I'm tracking right now. Shortstop that the Padres signed this past winter. But yeah, like, I think it's just important to think about, like, what's a guy's pedigree? Was this someone that we were excited about before the season? And then how old are they? Like, how much damage are they doing? Like, there's a lot that you got to factor in. You shouldn't just be looking at the leaderboard and saying, oh, wow, this guy's, like, leading the Arizona Complex League in homers. He must be really good. If he's, like, 20 years old, it just doesn't matter. Like, Alexander Canario. Like, if he's tearing it up in the complex league, and he's a year older than everybody, it just doesn't really matter.
I caught, I want to say 95% of that, but there was a little internet issue. So sorry if you guys got any of that on your end, but it seems like we cut out for a brief second, but thank you for explaining all that, James. And Averson Arteaga mentioned earlier, and our buddy Tim on Twitter wanted to know your thoughts a little bit about him. He's been making some noise, and he's in the complex league, slashing 373, 448, 780, six home runs in only 17 games. So catching your eye there, Arteaga?
Yeah, I added him to the rankings. I tried to see if Welsh had gotten eyes on him yet. He hasn't. I couldn't find any good video of him from this year. I'm not like all in on him or anything yet, but he was a notable guy in 2019. He was one of their notable J2 signees. He didn't really pop for me on the video back then. I liked Anthony Rodriguez more, and I still have Anthony Rodriguez ranked ahead of him. But he does have pedigree. He's got good size. He's got the type of size that you want to see in a teenager in the complex level. So definitely a guy to keep an eye on. And, you know, you kind of have to jump on these guys. You have to add them, especially in deeper leagues. Like, you can't really wait around to get a big sample size here because, you know, like, I'm sure, like, Errol Vera is already rostered. Preciado is long gone. I mean, he was rostered coming into the year. Jose Salas is rostered probably. So if you think this is real with Arteaga, or maybe you think it could be real, now's the time to jump. Like, you don't want to wait until I throw him inside my top 150, like if that happens, he's probably going to be rostered by then. I'm kind of taking a more patient approach with him just because I wasn't that in on him coming into the year. But he will be scooped up in your league if he's not already, especially with like Ian talking about him. So I think it's interesting. It's worth tracking. But he's still outside my top 200 for now.
Errol Vera. I love that name. Sounds like aloe. Sounds like aloe vera. Any other that was horrible. But no, any of these other rookie level guys you want to mention?
I did want to just mention and he wasn't there for long. But Everson Pereira with the Yankees was a big deal when he signed in 2017, I want to say. And he really struggled in 2018. He struggled again in 2019. And, you know, we hadn't seen him in over a year. He got sent to the Complex League, and he did exactly what a 20-year-old in the Complex League is supposed to do. He forced a promotion after, like, three games. And now he's at low A. You know, he's 20, but he's a young 20. And 20, I think, is fine for low A. Ideally, you're 19, but I mean, just given his background, like that's where he's supposed to be right now is low A, and he's tearing it up. And I just noticed that he's available in a lot of my dynasty leagues right now. So he's probably out there in some of yours. He's just outside my top 200, but you know, with like two more weeks of strong production, he could be inside my top like 150. There's a ton of fluidity, and we said this before, but like, once you get outside the top 100, top 125 or so, it doesn't take much for a guy to move from like 200 to 120. Like if a guy just goes nuts for a couple of weeks, that's really all it takes. And, you know, we have to be reacting quickly on guys like this. We don't have the time to sit around and wait for all the stuff to stabilize. And Pereira's got tools. He's got a pretty swing. He's not as speedy as he was when he signed. I think it's going to be more of kind of a four category thing, but the Yankees have really been churning out the pop-up guys this year. Kevin Alcantara is getting a lot of love, rightfully so. And Anthony Volpe, obviously, you know, they've had a lot of guys really kind of blow up on the position player side.
Not a guy ranked on your list anymore, but a little bit of a blast from the past, although he's just finally kind of getting his run in the majors. But Jared Oliva, 6 for his last 14 after just singling today. So opportunity seems to be there, but not a guy you're particularly high on anymore, it seems.
He's 20. He's almost 26. He'd been pretty bad. I mean, his season numbers are still not good. But, I mean, he's got opportunity and he's got speed. So if you're looking for steals, definitely a name to keep in mind.
Yeah, I think I still have him in the Mocky League that Derek Van Riper runs. So I was actually thinking about either activating him or cutting him loose. Well, I'll probably activate him, see if he can give me a few bags over the rest of the way. Anybody else you want to mention here, James, on your updated top 400 or lower-level guys that – you want to mention?
No, I mean, just go check out the article, check out the top 400. All the team top 20s are updated. They'll be getting a more sort of thorough sweep over the next like 3 or 4 weeks, but all the top 20s are updated. All the like OBP arrows are updated, all the ETAs are updated, all the year signs are updated, so you can sort it however you want using those filters on the top 400. So should be a lot there. I mean, you should definitely be using the My RotoWire feature so that you can see who's available very quickly in all your leagues. But yeah, that's all set. And then over the next week or so, I'll be working on the updated dynasty rankings. I already know that those are incredibly out of date, and the top 400 prospect rankings are a labor of love. The dynasty rankings are a labor of necessity, I would say. I hate those as soon as they go live, and I hate them even more like a week later. And now that they're like over a month old, they look terrible. But those will be getting a facelift here in about a week before the trade deadline.
Nice. We had a dynasty question in the chat about Trout. I'm wondering how far he should reach for Trout. Maybe two top 60 prospects, maybe three. I would say, yeah, at least two. Although he's going to be a really tough guy to evaluate for next year and beyond because the injuries are really adding up.
I'm looking at that question right now.
I still think you want at least like one top 20 prospect and then another top 41 probably.
Oh, yeah, man. You gotta get more than that. It's just, you know, I know that he's older and you're not competing, but I would say either hold him, like if you think that's the best you can do right now, I would just hold him until he's healthy. And like, it's not like Trout's going to not be awesome when he's healthy. I wouldn't trade Trout for Wander Franco straight up. I wouldn't trade Trout for Jared Kelenic straight up, even if you're rebuilding. Like, Trout's just too good. And I wouldn't even necessarily be focused on just prospects. I'd be looking at young big leaguers. Like, can you get like Ozzie Albies and Cody Bellinger or something like that? I'd be shooting much higher than what he said. And if that's not out there, just wait till he's healthy. Like healthy Trout is going to get you a ton by someone that's trying to win your league. So do not sell him for just a couple prospects who could be good. You gotta really get more than that.
And I also agree with him that he mentions that we should have a Super Mega Baseball 3 Twitch stream with our buddies at Fangraphs. Maybe we'll sync up a sport and figure something like that out. Well, James, walk up tracks. Time to draft our latest. Do you want to go first this week?
Yeah, man. This one, you might roll your eyes. This is technically a No Limit album, but it's a Snoop Dogg No Limit album. And the track is Bitch Please, Snoop Dogg featuring Exhibit and Nate Dogg.
I remember that, and
it's Dr. Dre on the beat, and I want the track to come in sort of at the end when Nate Dogg's just kind of crooning down the stretch of the track. I think that would be something that would really get me hyped in the box.
Was that off No Limits Top Dog or The Game Is to Be Sold, Not to Be Told?
No, those are two different albums.
Oh, I know.
The first one, No Limit Top Dog, and then
Game Is to Be Sold. Yeah.
Separate. And I mean, Last Meal, I think, is a classic album, but No Limit Top Dog is not a classic album, but I like that. I like that track a lot. I think I first heard that. I bought like, you know, those Source mixtapes you could buy.
Yeah. I had a couple hip hop hits, I think.
Yeah. It was like a Source something. And that was just one of the tracks in there. I was like, man, this is fire. And then I think I bought the album and I was like, oh, the rest of this album sucks. So.
Yeah, I don't remember Dre having many produced songs on those No Limit records of Snoop's. That's interesting. I just know that, you know, in addition to Doggy Style, The Game Is to Be Sold, Not to Be Told, another one of the all-time classic covers.
You know, well, and a classic title, too.
Yeah, that cover, though, and how the plastic rings on the CDs. I just love that. Well, I've been hinting for a while that I may mix in a non-hip-hop song. That's what I'm doing this week, James. I'm going down this road. A track from one of the great TV shows of all time, Better Call Saul. Chris Joss. I had to look this up on my phone to figure out exactly what it was called. Chris Joss, Tune Down. That's the name of the song. I described it on Twitter a few years ago as Big Mike Ehrmantraut Energy. It's just kind of who I am distilled down. Like, I'm not anywhere as cool as this little funky line, but I feel like that's this song kind of encapsulates who I am. deep down. So Better Call Saul, one of the best shows this side of The Sopranos. I finished my second rewatch, by the way, of The Sopranos.
I know Dan was calling for more Sopranos talk, more robe talk.
Well, I don't have much to share, but maybe when I start the third rewatch.
Maybe I can talk my wife into rewatching it, and I can tell you about the coolest thing that we saw the past week. But
yeah, I was thinking about maybe figuring out something new to watch. I really enjoyed the new season of I Think You Should Leave. I thought that was hilarious. And I guess I've never seen The Wire, so maybe I'll finally have to just buckle down and watch Wire from start to finish.
Yeah, you gotta remedy that. I mean, I know that it you know, you got a lot on your plate with the Def Jam Vendetta and everything, but if you could find time, I think The Wire would be worth it.
My internet was out the other day, and so I had to hook up Def Jam Vendetta.
Hell yeah.
Actually holds up incredibly well. You'd be shocked, I think. Even though the roster is a little lighter than I remembered. It's like Ghost, Method Man, Capone, Noriega, then it gets a little thin. I guess Scarface too, but for some reason I had it in my head that there were more classic rappers in that game. Well, James, anything else on your mind today, man?
No, man, that should cover it.
Well, we appreciate the insight as always. We appreciate you guys watching and hope you'll join us next week on the RotoWire Prospect Podcast, sponsored by WinBet.
Try RotoWire today, free for 10 days. Get our premium tools, rankings, analysis, and breaking news alerts. No credit card required. Go to rotowire.com/try.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.